Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer. Good evening, everyone. One thing the presidential race is doing this year is provoking people to think about what it means to be an American. So let's put the question out there for everybody. Whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American? And how does that inform your views about immigration? Call us at 1-800-543-2543. Whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American? And how does that inform your views about immigration today? I hope we can get some honest discussion going from lots of points of view, Clinton Democrats, Trump supporters, anyone else. Whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American? And how does that inform your views about immigration today? Obviously, a central issue in the presidential campaign. 1-800-543-2-543. 1-800, then count it down, 543-2-543. My guest for this full hour to share his views and to help take your calls and facilitate the conversation is Jose Antonio Vargas, who, among other things, started an organization called Define American, hashtag Emerging U.S., intended to foster dialogue about what it means to be an American in the 21st century. He also made the documentary films called Documented about his own undocumented immigration status, and White People, his Filipino immigrants report on whiteness in America. Here's a 40-second clip of that for everybody's context, in which he asks one question to a student of color and then hears from a white teacher.
Whites. So what do you think about when you think whites?
They're mean to us so much.
Here's the one about whites. A lot of things that I see on here are pretty negative.
All of them are negative. How does that feel when these young students see you as these things?
You know, it's something that I have to bring in here every single day. Just encountering it today, I think about, you know, one of my students who I said he couldn't go to the bathroom, and he says, you stole our land and you won't even let me go to the bathroom. You know? And while I know at the core he was joking, the skin color I wear allows me to represent something a lot bigger than myself.
That from Jose Antonio Vargas's film, White People. Among other things, Jose was part of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post team that covered the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007 and has been a journalist for other major news organizations. Jose, thanks so much for joining us for this hour. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And later we'll also hear from Asif Manvi, who you might know from the web series Halal in the Family, or from The Daily Show or The Brink on TV, or from other things, and from Melissa Mark Viverito, Speaker of the New York City Council. Jose is at the Democratic Convention. The clip from your film that we played, what does it say about our changing country that the white teacher feels negatively judged for his race, whether or not he's done anything wrong to anyone?
Well, I mean, in some ways, it's an interesting metaphor for what's happening right now. I think, especially in the age of Donald Trump, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, as I've told you before, Brian, you know, since 5 years ago, since coming out as undocumented, I see myself as a journalist. What I do is journalism. And I've been engaging with as many Americans as I can, about more than 800 events in the past 5 years in 48 states. And what I realize is that this question of how white people feel about these demographic changes and what it means for them is something that we need to explore a lot more. We need to unpack a lot more, right? I mean, too often in this country when we talk about, you know, diversity, we don't really include white people in the conversation. Usually it's people of color talking amongst ourselves about white people without them in the room. And I would argue that what's happened is we haven't really had the uncomfortable conversations that we should be having when it comes to race.
Right. So you're not trying to say, just so I get everybody as much off the defensive as possible right at the start, and know that everybody is welcome in this conversation.
Absolutely.
No matter what.
Absolutely.
You're not trying to say white people equals racists and people of color equals victims. You're trying to start a more complicated conversation, right?
Well, to me, it's a necessary conversation. I would argue, let's hit about this point about defensiveness. I'm in Philadelphia, right? My first time in Philly was in 2001 when I was a summer intern at the Philadelphia Daily News. It was my first East Coast experience, my first kind of black and white city experience, right? And yesterday when I was here, I tweeted this on Twitter. I said, Philadelphia, where founding fathers with no papers arrived, uninvited by indigenous native people, wrote the Constitution legalizing slavery. And it just went. And then the tweets that I got from people were like, how disrespectful. You know, how dare you? How dare you even talk about this? What? No one was arguing in terms of the merit of the fact that in this country, right? Like, actually, one of my friends, Richard Morgan, said, you know, slavery is baked into the government, right? Into the drafting of the Constitution, you know, the Three-Fifths Compromise, right? People feel very defensive about it. There was a lot of defensiveness among people on Twitter who were white, right? At least the ones that I could tell. And I'm like, wait a second. I'm just trying to state something here. Why all the projection? Why all the defensiveness? And to me, it really speaks to the fact that we have yet to unpack what this whiteness as a construct has really meant. Like, when did the Italians and the Irish and the German and the Latvian immigrants, when did they all become white? Is it because they weren't black? And now that the country is more Latino and more Asian, how do we make sure that Latinos and Asians don't fall into this anti-blackness, you know, mentality that has pervaded this country since its founding?
So
I mean, these are complicated questions.
Absolutely. And let's take our first caller. Kat in San Francisco, you're on the air. Kat, thank you so much for joining in.
Hi, Brian. What a pleasure. Hi. So my name's Kat. I was born and raised in Jackson Heights, New York City. Mm-hmm. My parents are immigrants. They're Colombian. I'm first generation. And to be an immigrant, for that means being able to have achieved the success I think I've achieved. I'm a graduate of Oberlin College. I'm 35. I've got a great job in advertising business, and my mom cleaned houses for 30 years, and she cleaned for some amazing people, a lot of great Jewish American families out in Long Island, and a lot of white families as well. And I have to say, I've had such a positive experience in this country. When I went to Oberlin, it was very different than the Jackson Heights, Queens, and I'm so grateful to my white friends and my allies. And we were able to, like, deconstruct all of these racial conversations that are kind of taking place. I've always been proud of being an American. I mean, I think we are in definitely some dark times in this country where we have to have these serious conversations. But I think there are a lot of immigrants. I mean, we've all been immigrants, right, in our history. So, I think it's an important dialogue to have.
Kat, thank you for starting us off. And let's go to Whitney in Washington, D.C. Hi, Whitney, you're on the air.
Hi. Happy to be on the air.
Happy to have you. Speak right into your phone so we can hear you really well.
So to me, I feel like to be an American, I mean, I'm not a first-generation American. I'm a native-born. My parents are from here. But, I mean, to be an American, I feel like it means to immerse yourself in the American culture. But I don't think that to do that, you need to give up your native culture from elsewhere. I mean, America's a nation of immigrants. That's what defines us.
And yet that becomes part of the conversation very frequently, where people say, oh, immigrants of 100 years ago, they came to renounce their citizenship from the old country, wherever that was, and embrace being American and learn English as quickly as they can. Now there's this dual identity thing that makes some people, some descendants of those immigrants, feel uncomfortable. What would you say to some of them?
I get that as an American. I totally get that, wanting people to speak English as that is our, you know, our national language. But I mean, what about when America expanded out west and it, you know, included Hispanic people, those of Spanish descent? I mean, there was no rush for Americans to speak English. I mean, in this country, you know, we don't really attempt to speak another language. We're all about English. I mean, what about that? I think that it's very possible to weave both identities.
I mean, Whitney, thank you so much. Jose, and Whitney, you can stay there. Jose, jump on in.
You know, I was just doing a conservative radio interview in Texas a couple of hours ago, which, you know, I think is really, really important to do. And this man, the guy who was interviewing me, said, well, you know, why don't these people just want to assimilate? Don't they want to learn English?
Spanish? Why are they speaking Spanish at Walmart? And I ended up, you know, asking him, well, you know, sir, when your family first got here from Italy, right, Italian-American, how long did it take them to speak English? Mm-hmm. Oh, it took them a while. It took them a while, he says. Well, wait a second. How come your parents took a while, and yet you're trying to rush these people who just got here and hating them for speaking Spanish? Like, what is that about, right? And again, like, I think there's a difference here. And I have to say, by the way, when we say we're a nation of immigrants, I understand that. As an immigrant, I get that. But we are leaving out two very key groups of people, Native Americans, indigenous people, uh-huh. and African Americans who are forcibly, you know, moved to this country to build this country. I think it's really important when we say that we contextualize it, especially now in the era of Black Lives Matter. And we don't even talk about Native Americans, by the way, when it comes to diversity in this country.
Whitney, thank you very much for chiming in. So let me play devil's advocate back to what you just said, Jose, imagining what the next line might have been from that. Did you say Italian-American caller to the conservative station?
No, actually, it was an Italian-American journalist.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Saying, and I referred to this before, the difference was that though it may have taken that ancestor longer than we want to admit to learn English, and so they may have been happy to have some Italian around for a while, they were striving to learn English as fast as they could and probably didn't even teach their kids Italian, as opposed to the attempt to have a foot in two cultures and have this hyphenated identity that we have today that might make him uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, again, this is where the construct of whiteness is very pervasive, right? I mean, is there a study out there that says that it takes 5-10 years for, say, Filipino Americans or Chinese Americans or, you know, Salvadoran Americans to learn English? Like, we are making assumptions here. How do we know what's really happening, you know, in these households, right? I mean, for me, I remember growing up in my Filipino American family. I watched The Golden Girls, Cheers, and Frasier. That's how I learned to speak English. Mm. My grandparents, who were, by the way, naturalized American citizens, would be watching the Filipino channel. Because even though they were naturalized American citizens, they still felt very Filipino, right? And I think that's a more complicated way now of how we look about multiculturalism. You know, Toni Morrison had that one line, you know, once that said that, you know, in this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate.
Yes.
Right? And I think that is totally what we're living through now.
Let's take another call. Jessica in Montclair, New Jersey. You're on the air. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Good. So I am a daughter of an illegal immigrant. My father's parents left Poland before World War II and couldn't get into the United States because of quotas, and so they went to Canada. And then when my dad was one and my aunts, his twin sisters, were two, they took the train to Grand Central and never went back, and became legal after World War II when there was some sort of amnesty for Jews illegally in the United States. And so we have always grown up with great compassion for people who come into this country illegally because they're, I mean, not that a country shouldn't secure its, you know, have rules at its borders, but I think we have to look to why people are coming. And so my whole family has just always been involved in volunteerism around that issue. And that to me is what being an American is thinking, you know, give me, you're tired, you're poor, and we were all once strangers in a strange land.
So, Jessica, let me throw a Donald Trump quote at you, or really a summary of his message. When he proposes a border wall and a Muslim entry ban, he puts it in very practical terms. People coming here illegally from Mexico commit more crime per capita than the native-born and drive down wages because of the labor supply. And Muslims are only a risk because there's this strain of Islamist terrorism in the world right now, and it's too hard to vet everybody. He doesn't say, although sometimes he puts it in racist-sounding terms, he doesn't say Mexicans and Muslims are changing Western culture and making Christian white people a minority. So we in the media tend to debate concrete things like crime rates and wages and refugee screening procedures. And then you come on and you say, give me your tired, you're poor. I have a lot of sympathy for people for the reason that they're coming here. Do you think that there's a deeper conversation about change that we're missing by sticking to the concrete crime and terrorism and wages question?
Yes. I also really question those statistics. What Trump is quoting, and frankly, my first husband was Iranian and Muslim, so my older daughter is half Muslim, and so that just fills me with terror, that all that rhetoric. But I do think it's getting away from who we are, and our country has always changed because of immigration, waves of immigration. There were waves of Jewish immigration, and now bagels and lox are like part of the national
Americana,
food.
Yeah.
You can say the same thing for...
What, with the various things in your background,
yeah.
How do you identify with your whiteness? What does it mean to you to be white? Or do you even think of yourself as white as from Polish heritage?
You know, I never thought of myself as white until I went to high school. I actually went to the High School of Performing Arts in New York, the same school, and that was the first time I was in a demographic that really reflected the city as a whole, and because other people saw me as white, I always felt like, no, I'm not white, I'm Jewish, because where I grew up in Park Slope at the time, Jews were a real minority, and, you know, I had friends in junior high school who... We're like, oh, you're Jewish? Do you have horns? You know?
So not as simple as being white
not
in
as
your
simple
experience.
As being white. And my husband now is Puerto Rican. So we're truly a melting pot here.
Thank you very much for your call. And I want to go to Paul in Miami next. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling. So we're asking everybody, whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American, and how does that inform your views about immigration?
I was born in South Florida to two immigrant parents from South America. And to me, you know, immigration in America just means opportunity, the opportunity to come, to leave behind countries or economies, cultures, where people can't advance, they don't have the opportunities to work hard and make a living like they can here, or at least, you know, used to. And, I mean, I think immigration is just about a better future, especially when, you know, my parents came here with no education, no family, no support, and they worked their butts off for 20 years to let me, the youngest of three boys, be the first one in my family to actually graduate from college.
So do you think there's too much romanticizing of America and the need that some people have for immigrants to come here because they, quote, love America, as opposed to come here for what I hear you describing, and it may be pretty universal, the practical possibility of having a better life for yourself and your children? That's not loving America. That's making a practical decision, right?
It is, but I consider them the same. You know, people love America because this is the land of opportunity, because people can come here with nothing and work hard, you know, work nights, work weekends, cleaning houses, you know, doing whatever they can to scrape by to make an opportunity. And they love America because that is one of the few places in the world where people can come
can
from all different backgrounds.
Paul, thank you so much. Jose, go ahead.
Let me just jump in here. I mean, I think what he's speaking to is this idea of the courage that it takes for people, right? I mean, I think about my grandmother who moved here in 1984. You know, she barely graduated, I think, fifth grade. The only English she knew was from Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra songs. To this day, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. It's like she's committed that to memory, right? To think that she left her province in the Philippines to come here to serve people food, right, for like, what, 25 years, you know? The courage it took for her to do that. But here's where it gets really interesting, Brian, right? When white people...
You know what? Hold that thought, because we're coming up on a break. We'll take this one-minute break, and then Jose Antonio Vargas will tell us where it gets really interesting. This is our convention call-in. Stay tuned. from WNYC in New York. This is a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer with journalist, filmmaker, and immigration rights activist Jose Antonio Vargas. Our question for the hour stands, whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American, and how does that inform your views about immigration? We're also getting into your notions of whiteness or whatever you consider your race to be. 800-543-2-543, 1-800-543-2-543. Jose, pick it up right where you left off. You said you were going to get to the interesting part.
I mean, the interesting part is, you know, this idea of when European people move, when white people move, when white immigrants move, it's courageous. It's manifest destiny, right? It's white man's burden. Like, these are the things that are the courageous things. When people of color attempt to move, it becomes a question of legality, sometimes even criminality. Like, why are they moving, right? Like, why are they taking over? So I think this is where the intersection of race and immigration is not something we can really, you know, I find that at this moment now in this country, it is even more of an utmost importance that we really study our own history and how we've constructed these things and what it means for us right now.
Jim in Brick, New Jersey, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, I have a lot of problems with what's being said. It's like reverse exceptionalism. I'm of Italian descent, partly. I mean, it went from what had been the melting pot, and yeah, English was not encouraged, but who's saying that's right? And then it's where it went from the melting pot to multiculturalism and the glorious mosaic where people were resisting assimilation and having classes in their own language and then being streamlined along in that. It was engendering not learning English. And America has bent over backwards. You can go in various communities and have Spanish is on the ballot. I mean, it's on labeling and other cultures as well. And then the other prior arguments were predicated on slavery. I mean, who's held a slave? I was not descended of any slave owners.
I want to ask you this question, actually.
Very negative.
I wanted to ask you this question, sir. How would you define
melting pot? Who are you to be the final arbiter?
No, nobody's the final arbiter.
Brian. I think you really stepped off on the wrong foot tonight. I voted for Obama twice, but all the comments prior have been reverse exceptionalism.
Jose, go ahead.
No, I don't want to really even feel
you don't
the
want
question.
To engage.
I call to voice a complaint, really.
Jim, thank you very much. And maybe he speaks for a lot of people.
And again, like, this is where the defining of the terms is, to me, crucial, right? He made a lot of assumptions in that statement, right? One of which is they're not even learning English. Like, I speak English, I think, pretty well, right? Most of my family members here are Filipino Americans who speak Tagalog, speak English also pretty well, graduate, college educated. And by the way, what is so wrong with this country speaking in many tongues? Don't we live in a global economy? Like, I tell my grandmother all the time, you know, Lola, that's grandmother in Tagalog, English is good. We should speak English. When we're shopping at Macy's, when we're at Target, we speak English, right? But we can speak Tagalog. Is it that Americans who don't speak that much other languages are threatened that other languages are being spoken? I mean, is that the question here? And this idea of melting pot, you know, I think that's one of those myths that we hold on to, right? When really the reality here is people aren't necessarily interested in melting into anything. It becomes this idea, again, of what we're holding on to, right? I mean, again, back to that Toni Morrison quote, right? In America, American means white, right? What did that mean for Italians and Germans and Irish? And when did the Irish become white, right? And I remember, Brian, actually, when I got arrested in Texas a couple of years ago, and I was thinking about how we called these Central American children, and we called a bunch of illegals, right? And yet when we see other children from other different countries, we call them what? Refugees. What's the difference, right? I mean, how has that been racialized in how we think about illegal immigration in this country?
Rob in Sterling, Virginia.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Rob, you're on the air. Yes, it's you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I wanted to say that, you know, within this, we are in the midst of what I would call a cultural evolution. And I mean, the whites went through the same thing. I mean, when the Italians came over and immigrated, you know, initially, and then the Irish came over, they hated each other, and it was a white on white thing, you know, that happened in New York. You know, I mean, but it was about a cultural evolution, and this is where we need to have the discussion. How can I appreciate? What can you bring me? What may I bring you? And to your keynote speaker. Yes, you know, when we wrote, you know, all men are created equal, we began slavery, but we also were in the midst of a genocide of the American Indians, you know. Yep. And you think of the culture Absolutely. That we lost during that period, the writings that we lost, the fables, and the truths that they had through generations of their society that we lost through that process. The same thing when the Spaniards invaded the Aztecs, and all those writings, all of their material, lost. If you are a painter and you want to create a painting, you need a multitude of colors. Our music today would be nothing without the Afro-American work songs the slaves sang in the fields. Thus began the blues, that became rock and roll, that became popular music. It's an evolution, and so many people are resistant to this change. They fight against it. They talk about the different languages.
What do you think people are afraid? If you think, I think I hear you suggesting that there's an irrational fear of change or of difference that, again, goes beyond what we hear from Donald Trump or others in the presidential campaign, that the problem is higher crime rates among people who are here illegally, or difficulty in vetting Muslims when there's a strain of Islam in the world, no matter how small, that's trying to get people to sneak in.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there is a certain agreement when you are an American that you need to adhere to or respect certain values that we have. For instance, Sharia law, the stoning of women, cutting off hands if you're a thief. I mean, I'm not sure about this, but this is what I've heard Sharia law is about.
Uh-huh. So when you talk about, and Rob, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for your call. And Rob is talking about a give and take from both sides, and on, or all sides. There are so many sides to this. And on that last point, where does the commonality enter for you as you've been emphasizing the diversity and the myths in our history about how diverse we were, but in different ways? How about the commonality? Where do you enter that part of the conversation for you, Jose?
I mean, for me, the commonality is this, is our belief that this is a country of freedom, right? That this is a country where you can dream as big, you know, as big and as wide as you possibly can, right? That this is a country where anything is possible. I mean, that's why I think, you know, the idea of migration as a courageous act, right, that founded this country in that way. I mean, I think we have to insist on that. I have to say, Brian, you
know, as a
journalist,
let me follow up again, but where does assimilation come in? And he used a great extreme example, which is like the worst of Sharia law, that you're going to cut off people's hands for ordinary crimes or unacceptable behaviors, however those are defined.
I mean, how do you define assimilation? How do you define assimilation, Brian?
How do you define assimilation?
I mean, assimilation to me, right, is being here in America, understanding what our founding principles were, right? What kind of values we promote, family, individualism, freedom, right? That to me is assimilation. But a lot of the assimilation language that we're talking about has to do with language, has to do with culture, no matter how you, quote unquote, define culture. Now, mind you, for a lot of people of color, right, white people may feel that, hey, that culture seems exotic or whatever. Us people of color are looking at white people going, hey, white people are kind of exotic. We're doing the exact same thing that you think is happening to you. Right? And this is where I think the descent, now that this country is going through an unprecedented demographic shift, right? I would argue that we are now at a moment in which we actually have to re-examine these things. That's why this question that you're asking about, what does, you know, America mean to you? My bigger question is, what does citizenship mean to you? Mm-hmm. What does citizen, is it pieces of papers? That's it? Or you were born here, poof, you're an American, that's it?
This is our convention call-in, and listen to this.
We're just an ordinary family living in your town.
But don't worry!
We like monster trucks and football, even though we're brown.
We hate courage!
So welcome to our clan. We promise there's no...
Who knows plan. The theme from Halal in the Family? Also joining us now is Asif Manvi. Many of you know his web series, Halal in the Family, or his roles on TV, such as On the Brink or on The Daily Show, where he was sometimes jokingly called their senior Asian correspondent, senior foreign-looking correspondent, and other such things. And maybe you've read his autobiographical book, No Man's Land. Hi, Asif. Thanks so much for doing this. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
And you know we're on with Jose Antonio Vargas. Do you know each other before tonight?
I don't know if we've met.
Not yet.
No,
but I'm a big fan of your work.
Can I just say, I was just listening to the conversation before I came on about Sharia law, and can I just say to all the white, scared white people out there, Sharia law is not taking over this country. You know why? Because we have a constitution. It's not, there will be no, there is, Sharia law is not going to take over America. That cannot happen. And all these, like, you know, Newt Gingrich and these nutballs over there who are talking about Sharia law taking over this country, it's never going to happen. And there's all these, like, very, I feel like there's all these really scared, nice Americans who feel like Sharia law is going to take over this country and they need to, like, vote for Donald Trump to, like, make sure that doesn't happen. And I just want to tell you, as an American Muslim, that's never going to happen. Please believe me. We don't want it, and you don't want it.
And
nobody
wants
it.
And I actually think, and that's, you know, you use humor so effectively all the time, but that the concern, the fear, goes deeper than that, because Sharia law is such an extreme example in the kinds with the kinds of Sharia law that we're talking about in this context. What I think a lot of people are afraid of, who are white and descendants of older immigrants generations, that the culture is going to be taken over and degraded in different ways. I'm putting words into people's mouths who aren't here.
What culture are we talking about? What culture?
Exactly.
We're talking about American culture, because American culture does not belong to white people. It doesn't belong to the Republicans. It doesn't belong to, you know, America is an idea, and we all get to partake in that idea. And the multiculturalism, the diversity, the multiplicity of what America is what makes America great. It's what makes America the greatest country in the world. And if you take that away, and if you turn it into a country just for white people and Anglo-Saxons and the values that, you know, if it's only people who came over on the Mayflower, then America loses everything about America that makes America great. You know, this is the irony of this. This is the ridiculousness of this argument. That somehow there was a time when America was great, and we need to go back to that time, which I have no idea when that time was. Like, when was that? During Vietnam? Was that like the 1930s during the Depression? Was it during slavery? I don't know when America was so great. America has always been a complicated, diverse, multicultural place. You know, except maybe when the Native Americans were here, and then it was their land, really. They're the only people that have any claim to this place at all.
And there were lots of different tribes. But Karen in Maplewood is our next caller. You're on WNYC from Maplewood, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
What would you like to add, or do you want to answer our question, which is whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be an American?
I was not born in the United States. I was born in Sweden, and I have immigrated here. And I came through the hard way of earning a work visa and earning my right to stay that way. And my comment is people come to the United States for great opportunities, including myself, and I had to prove myself to be able to stay here. And people discuss illegal immigrants are very upset about that. But to the extent that they come here to better their lives and work hard, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. My issue is that every year there is a lottery where people get green cards through a lottery. And to me, that seems very unfair because we don't know who they are or what qualifications they have. That's point number one. And point number two is that people also get green cards through investing here.
Yes.
And I think it's a shame that people should be able to buy themselves a green card, which is essentially what's happening.
So when you say a lottery is unfair because you don't know about the qualifications of people, do you think the country should set its immigration criteria at all on the basis of merit or the needs of the country, however that's defined?
Well, we already have laws that specify what the criteria are. There's political asylum, of course, and then there is also showing that you have an ability. There's also, you know, your relatives. So I think that we have laws that should continue mm-hmm. to be adhered to. But adding this lottery that was added 15, 20 years ago, that I don't understand what's yes. the need for that.
Some randomness. Thank you very much. Well, Jose Antonio Vargas, what about for you? What about criteria? When we hear some of the push to change the immigration laws so that there aren't as many relatives coming in on relative status because those people tend to add less than others to the economy who are judged by their economic potential primarily. You know, we hear that in the debate.
Yeah. Well, there was another comment that was made in that statement that I think we have to talk about, which is that, you know, undocumented people like me, right, we want a process. Like, I want to legalize my status. I want there to be a process so I can legalize my status, right? And I think that's a big... I got to tell you, Brian, one of the questions I get asked every day is, why don't I just make myself legal?
So what should the criteria be, in your opinion?
Well, the criteria is something that I think we as a country have to debate. We have to talk about it. And, you know, this idea, you know, I am a little torn, for example, about the lottery, right? Like, I'm torn about the fact that in this country, there's only 5,000 visas available for, quote-unquote, low-skilled workers. I'm torn about the idea that in this country, as the woman, you know, reiterated, that people can just buy themselves a visa, right, if they want to invest. Like, I am now a small business owner in this country as an undocumented business owner, and I can't do that, right? I mean, this is where class really mm-hmm. comes into play, right? The fact that my mother has to wait in a 16-year waiting list because she's from the Philippines, which is what happens when you're from the Philippines, Guatemala, or India, right? And yet European immigrants, if they want to just come visit and see, you know, Hamilton or Book of Mormon over the weekend, they can, right? Like, well, again,
so,
we're
about a minute before a break. Asif, what do you want to add?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly why we have the lottery. Is the reason that we have the lottery to create a certain diversity around low-income
yes.
people and stuff like that? I don't know what that exactly is about. But yeah, I mean, look, to me, America, you know, you talk about, like, what America is. America is, you know, this idea that people can invest in America. You know, look, America is a place where we are looking for people to invest in this country, whether that is intellectually, whether that is through education or monetarily or whatever. That is what America is about, right? So if you can come here with money and you can invest in our economy and in the culture, then I don't see that as being... I mean, people, you know, half of New York is owned by foreigners, you know what I mean? So... that is a reality of investment in this country. That's what happens.
And we will continue on our convention call-in with Asif Manvi and Jose Antonio Vargas. We have Melissa Mark Viverito from the New York City Council coming up, and more of your calls. Stay with us. From WNYC in New York, it's a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer. Whether you're native-born or an immigrant to this country, what does it mean to you to be American, and how does that inform your views about immigration? Clinton Democrats, Trump supporters, anyone else, 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543, when some of our callers finish up, because all our lines are full right now, with Jose Antonio Vargas, from Define American, hashtag Emerging U.S., and the actor and comedian Asif Manvi. Asif, the title of your series, Halal in the Family, obviously references the old TV show, All in the Family, with its bigoted character, Archie Bunker, whose name is coming up a lot this year with respect to a certain kind of Trump supporter. How literally are you trying to draw a connection between All in the Family and anything going on today in your series Halal in the Family?
Well, I mean, you know, what we were doing with Halal in the Family was parodying that idea of the 90s sitcom or the 80s sitcom, you know, that Norman Lear type sitcom. And what we were focused mostly on was issues dealing that Muslim Americans, American Muslims, have to deal with on a regular basis in terms of profiling and Islamophobia and things like that. Can I just say that I just had my minions go do a little research on the lottery thing.
Okay.
And what I'm realizing is, what I understand is that, like, that has to do with allowing people from countries who do not, who don't have a lot of immigration to the U.S., allowing those people to have access into the American dream. So mm-hmm. it's actually a way to make a more diverse country for us. You know what I mean? So it's that not all of the immigrants that come to America are from Europe and, you know, wealthier nations. There actually are immigrants coming from Bangladesh and from Colombia and other places that maybe don't have as much. So I think that's really what that lottery is really about. And that's just in response to the previous
yes.
caller.
So well intended in that respect.
Yeah.
And let's go to another caller. Krista in Cooper City, Florida. You're on the air. Hi, Krista.
Hi. I'm a native-born American. My ancestors came on the Mayflower, as a matter of fact. And I consider being white not to be necessarily American. We are all, most of us, mixtures. And I think the British have a different case than us. In the Brexit, they have a history of millenniums of white culture. And for them, it's different than with us. We are a mixture, and that's the whole idea of America, is mixing and assimilating foreigners.
And so in Cooper City, Florida, I don't know how diverse it is right there in Cooper City. Obviously, a lot of South Florida is extremely diverse.
There's a lot of Hispanics.
A lot of immigrants from Latin America. Do you feel ever, as a white person, oh, my God, we're being overrun? There are so many.
Yeah, I work as a cashier at Dollar Tree, and there's a lot of Hispanics that come in there, and I don't speak Spanish. There's a Hispanic guy who works there who doesn't speak Spanish either, and they give him a hard time. And he makes comments like, we need a wall. we don't like the foreigners that are here already. Why do we want more to come in? So, you know, he's just joking. It's one thing
if a guy in Cooperstown, Florida, is making that joke. It's a very different thing.
Cooper City.
Florida. It's a very different thing when the presidential nominee from the Republican Party is saying the same thing, you know? It's not a joke when that happens.
I want to lead into the Speaker of the City Council of New York, Melissa Mark Viverito, with a call from New York City, and it's Javier in Brooklyn. Javier, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hello, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here. I wanted to add a little bit to the conversation, a little more complexity. I am an immigrant to the United States when I was a teenager, and I am now an American citizen. But I grew up in Bogota, in Colombia. And in South American perspective, you know, America is the whole continent, and that is a big part of my identity. So when this question comes up of what it means to be American, you know, for me, it's this continental idea that we all were colonized by Europeans, that we all had to struggle for independence, that we all had to find a way to come together, you know. And the word itself, America, you know, that we're talking about right now, the country, it's rather new, because it used to be that people identified as New Yorkers. It used to be people identified as Pennsylvanians. And it's only recently that this bigger nationalistic identity, you know, relatively recent, that this bigger nationalistic identity has taken shape in the country of the United States. And for me, that's a very interesting way of what this word represents and how it means different things for different people, you know. And I think that taking this perspective, this continental perspective, allows us to be more tolerant of each other, because we all went through very similar struggles with, you know, different things in Central America, in Chile, in Colombia, in the United States, but we all had to live through this colonization and this freedom that we all look for, you know?
Javier, thank you very much. And also with us briefly now is Melissa Mark Viverito, Speaker of the New York City Council. Hello, Madam Speaker. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Brian. Always a pleasure.
Now, Jose, maybe you'd like to help introduce the speaker, because I see you tweeted a picture of her today wearing a hat that you made, I think, right?
Yes, you can get the hat at defineamerican.com. It's our take on Make America Great, and the hat says Immigrants Make America Great. And thankful for the speaker for wearing the hat.
And you were wearing that hat, Madam Speaker, even though,
yes,
as a Puerto Rican-born person, you are a U.S. citizen by birth. You're not an immigrant. But does your own identity overlap with immigrants and native-borns in certain respects?
Of course. And if you look at the history of migration of Puerto Ricans, and actually on the first night here at the convention, one of the first speakers to speak was Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who is a champion, right, of immigration reform, but he is Puerto Rican. And he talked about that, right, that when his parents migrated here from Puerto Rico in the 1950s, which was a large migration, we were seen, right, as people with diseases, bringing diseases. We were stereotyped. We were disparaged. We were criticized. The same experiences that immigrants face. And there is a lot of ignorance that exists, unfortunately, still about Puerto Rico and its relationship to the United States. And this has emerged. So we do have parallel experiences. And I think that that's something that really is a unifying force. And I'm a strong supporter of immigration reform. We've done some great work in New York City to demonstrate that. And the message here in this conference, which is really fascinating when you contrast it to what's happened with the Republicans, right? It's everything is focused here at the Democratic Conference about unity, about respecting diversity, about embracing diversity. And I think that forces us to really challenges us to look at what are the unifying elements across experiences, right? A white American versus an African American versus an immigrant. You know, there's commonalities, and I think this conference is having us really look at that, as opposed to the Republican messaging, which was about looking at those divisions and separating us even further apart from each other.
Can you put some of those commonalities into words? A few of the big ones.
I mean, it's just about finding things of common interest, right? When you have a family that maybe is undocumented, that it came here to provide for themselves and for their family and to create a better future, to have better educational opportunities. That is what every person aspires to, right? That's a commonality to the maybe person who is born and raised here in the United States that is also looking for that reality for themselves and for their family. Those are the points of commonality, and I think that we need to really find that. But immigration is something that obviously is beautiful aspect of our country. It brings so much. It has made this country what it is. And finding that pathway to citizenship for the 12 million undocumented is something that we really need to have a sense of urgency about. And I believe that President Clinton, when she becomes president, and she will be president, is really interested in making that a reality.
I want to ask you, because you preside over the legislature in a city that's had no ethnic or racial majority for a generation. And I think that's the future of America. We know demographically it's the future of America. Already white births are less than 50%. So if people are afraid, who are white today, of living in a country where they're not the majority anymore, where there's no majority, as the Speaker of the New York City Council, where that's been the reality for a generation, can it work?
Of course. And I think that we see it work in New York City. You know, we have a governing body, the legislature of the city of New York, is majority of color. And that is the demographic reality of the city. That's important. Obviously, as we make public policy and as we enact laws for the city of New York, and also that we have such diversity in the languages we speak and across all five boroughs, there's so much beauty in that, right? If you look in Queens, the most diverse borough and the most diverse part of our country, I believe, it really is it has worked. It works that we can come together. Obviously, there's challenges within that. As we all know and we've heard, New York City's public education system is one of the most segregated in the country, and that continues to be a reality that we have to face. When we talk about gentrification and displacement, the fear that we're not going to have integrated communities, right? So that's that. Those are the challenges that we as public policymakers have before us. But we have a progressive leadership in the council that really embraces the diversity, sees the value that it brings, what it has contributed to the city, and we have to find ways that we can continue to reinforce that. And I think that our model works, and we want to see that also in other parts, people embracing that in other parts of the country as well.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito at the Democratic Convention. Thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Thank you.
And we're still with Jose Antonio Vargas from Define American and Asif Manvi, who I did the tongue twister wrong on the title of his book before.
I was going to leave that alone, but...
I feel responsible. It's not No Man's Land, that old cliche, whatever that means. It's No Land's Man.
No Land's Man.
Because you come from three different countries, right?
I do. I was born in India. I grew up in the UK and then moved to the United States when I was in high school. So, you know, I've been an immigrant twice. Talking about the call earlier, I was talking about the difference in the UK and America. I experienced that firsthand. You know, that is the beauty of America, unlike Europe, I think, is that it is about that inclusiveness, and it is about that, you know, that is the best part of what this country has to offer, you know? I feel like America is an idea. America is a set of values. And if you say you're an American, then you are an American because you believe in those values, and that's why you came here. You came here for, the human rights and the diversity and the multiplicity of this culture, and for everybody to have an equal chance and an equal opportunity. That is the immigrant story, which is unlike, the sort of historical context that countries like England and other than Europe have. You know, America is a place where we all arrived here from somewhere else. And we all get to
Except
buy into this
Americans.
Idea.
George and Annandale, Virginia, and black people arrived here from somewhere else, but not by choice. But George in Annandale, Virginia, you're on the air. Hi, George.
Hello, how are you doing?
Okay.
Yes, for me, being an American is, I grew up in New Jersey, 15 miles from the Statue of Liberty, where it says, bring us your huddled masses, your four-year tire, those yearning to be free. And I think being an American is treating everybody equally, regardless of race, creed, or color. Everybody came here pretty much either for economic advancement or for freedom, for religious freedom or freedom from persecution. And the idea that we're going to start limiting that to say, oh, well, you can only come here if you can invest, or only if you look like us, and we're going to start putting these criteria on, to me just seems crazy. My father was born here on a business trip in the 1920s, went back with his family to Cuba, came here at age 12 and a half, knowing not any English at all. In 1944, my grandmother signed so he could join the army at 17 and a half, where he fought in Germany in 1945. And I just can't believe that my father was in the first unit in one of the concentration camps. Mm. And nowadays we have a representative from the nominee from one of the major parties, one that I used to vote for, thinking it's okay to retweet images from anti-Semitic white supremacist websites.
Right. Now, at the other extreme, were you saying, in effect, open borders when you said that they're shouldn't maybe be criteria by which we judge whether people are qualified to come to this country or how many people?
I can see that nowadays, with our current level of development, we may need to limit the number. But the idea that then we are going to limit the number and then also say, you can't come if you're Muslim, or you can't come if you're this ethnic group or this nationality. To me, seems to be against everything that our country is supposed to have as its base values.
George, thank you very much. Jose Antonio Vargas,
Ryan,
I want to thank you for being with us for this whole hour. You want to get a last word in?
Well, actually, I was at this event with Mayor de Blasio a couple of years ago, and he said in 2011, 37% of
Mayor,
New Yorkers...
Mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, go ahead.
37% of New Yorkers were foreign-born, 37% in 2011. Guess what? In 1910, a century ago, more than 40% of New Yorkers were foreign-born, right? Actually, back in 1910, New York was more of a foreigner place than even now, right? And I was remembering, while your caller was talking, this idea that when Emma Lazarus wrote that poem, this country was facing anti-immigrant sentiment, which is what we're facing now. And I have to say, this election is all about how we define American. Hope. How do we define American? And if you want to know more, please go to defineamerican.com.
And guess what? We are not going to settle it tonight, are we? But Jose Antonio Vargas and Asif Manvi, thank you so much for engaging with everybody and with each other on our convention call-in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Immigrants, we get the job done. So what happens if we win?
I go back to France. I bring freedom to my people if I'm given the chance.
We'll be with you when you do.
Go lead your man.
I'll see you on the other side.
Till we meet again.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. And I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot.
Till the world turns upside.
More like a memory. This is where it gets me. On my feet, the enemy ahead of me. If this is the end of me, at least I have a friend with me. Weapon in my hand, a command of my men with me. Then I remember my allies is expecting me. Not only that, my allies is expecting. We gotta go, gotta get the job done. Gotta start a new nation, gotta meet my son. Take the bullets out your gun. The bullets out your gun. We move undercover and we move as one.
And that is our convention call-in for tonight. I'm Brian Lehrer. We'll be back with another one in this hour tomorrow night. Stay tuned for our convention coverage. We're letting Hamilton have the last word.
You have your orders now, go man, go. And so the American experiment begins with my friends all scattered to the winds. Lawrence is in South Carolina, redefining bravery. We'll never be free until we end slavery. When they finally drive the